This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Today is Tuesday, January 19th, Election Day in the state of Massachusetts. And we're seeing something today that no one thought imaginable just a few months ago when Senator Ted Kennedy passed away. A Republican in the lead in the latest polls heading into Election Day, when just a couple of weeks ago, the Democrat was up by nearly 20 points. But State Senator Scott Brown has surged behind a grassroots uprising in the Bay State. Folks apparently fed up with big government and especially the health care reform plan. Brown has made opposition to that the centerpiece of his campaign. Democratic Attorney General Martha Coakley has also been branded as an ineffective candidate and has steadily seen her support erode in recent days. But in a state where Democrats outnumber registered Republicans 3-1, nothing is being taken for granted, and both parties have massive get-out-the-vote efforts. Of course, half the voters in the state are independents, and according to the latest poll from Politico, those are trending towards Brown by a wide margin, 69% to 28% for Coakley. According to the Politico poll, Brown ahead by 9 points, according to voters on Sunday. The polls close in Massachusetts at 8 o'clock Eastern time, and the results should be coming in after that. The big debate, of course, in recent days is if Brown wins, how quickly will Massachusetts state officials and even the U.S. Senate agree to seat him, since he would be that 41st Republican vote. And if they all hang together, they would be able to stop the Democratic health care reform agenda. As a result, plans B and C are already in place for the health care agenda in case Brown wins. If Coakley wins, the Democrats will continue as they have been. But if, in fact, Republicans are able to sustain a filibuster on Capitol Hill, the first option for Democrats is having the House of Representatives approve the bill passed on Christmas Eve by the Senate as is. No amendments, meaning if the House were to pass it, it would not have to go back to the Senate before it goes to the president for his signature. Only problem with that is that most House Democrats don't like it at all. They say it doesn't go nearly far enough, does not contain the public option, and that doesn't have that protection for union members when it comes to major excise taxes on those Cadillac health care plans. Also a problem, the Senate bill has more permissive abortion language that does not protect taxpayers from funding the bill for elective abortions, and without stronger language, moderate Democrats in the House may not go along with the final legislation. A third option being discussed right now is to use the reconciliation tactic in the Senate, meaning only 51 votes are necessary to approve the legislation. The problem with that for Democrats is that the reconciliation process is only eligible to be used on issues specifically related to spending and taxes. That means changes in policy, like the forcing of an individual mandate or employer mandate or new restrictions on the insurance industry, would not be part of the final legislation. All of this as a result of the Senate race up in Massachusetts that Republicans are now slightly favored to win, and we may find out finally tonight if, in fact, that will be the case. Meanwhile, Steny Hoyer, the House Majority Leader, says that despite the strong House Democratic opposition to the Senate bill being passed as is, he says that's better than nothing, and so that might be the course that is followed. Meanwhile, one prominent House Democrat says if Republicans are in a position to actually sustain a filibuster, it's time to kill the filibuster rule. Barney Frank, longtime Democratic House member from the Bay State, says that this is an unconstitutional move that many people have seen as a part of the Constitution, but it simply isn't. Frank made the comments in an interview with Air America.
We have a serious constitutional problem. There's been a de facto amendment of the U.S. Constitution in an anti-small-d Democratic direction with that 60-vote majority. It is outrageous. I think we should now be crusading for Democratic senators, maybe some Republicans who join us, to amend the rules of the Senate. God didn't create the filibuster.
And in other news, before we leave today, 1 week after a magnitude 7 earthquake in Haiti, killing what many people believe could be as high as 200,000 people, scores of U.S. troops landed on the lawn of the shattered presidential palace to the cheers of quake victims. Haitians jammed the fence around the palace grounds to gawk and cheer as U.S. troops emerged from 6 Navy helicopters. The U.N. Security Council unanimously approved 3,500 extra troops and police officers to beef up security in Haiti and ensure that desperately needed aid gets to earthquake victims. Tons of relief supplies still going in. Some volunteers, relief workers still unable to even land because of the congestion at the airport with all the aid workers as well as the relief supplies clogging the main airport there. Still a week later, we're seeing miraculous stories. Family members, loved ones not giving up hope, digging little piece by little piece and finally hearing the voice, the faint voices of their loved ones still alive, but very weak underneath the rubble. And we've seen some very heartwarming stories there just in the past couple of days. Finally, on Tuesday, the FBI reportedly collected illegally more than 2,000 U.S. telephone call records between 2002 and 2006 by invoking terrorism emergencies that did not exist or by simply persuading phone companies to provide records. That reported by the Washington Post and according to internal bureau memos and interviews at the FBI. According to the Post, counterterrorism officials inside the FBI headquarters did not follow their own procedures that were put in place to protect civil liberties. The stream of urgent requests for phone records also overwhelmed the FBI Communications Analysis Unit with work that ultimately was not connected to imminent threats. At the same time, any type of phone record seizure was required to be accompanied by a national security letter explaining what particular case the seizure of the records was connected with. However, over time, those letters became extremely vague, did not reference specific cases, and sometimes those letters were never even issued at all, and oftentimes they were issued ex post facto. In the end, FBI officials told the Post their own review has found that about half of the 4,400 toll records collected in emergency situations or with after-the-fact approvals were done in technical violation of the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. More on this today at dateline.radioamerica.org or worldnetdaily.com. I'll talk with constitutional law professor Robert Pugsley of the Southwestern Law School in Los Angeles. Also today, you can hear my interview with Matt Schlapp, who served as political director in the George W. Bush administration. We'll talk about the significance of the Massachusetts Senate race and what it might foreshadow for the midterm elections later this year. We'll also talk about some of the fallout from a potential Republican win in that Senate race with longtime USA Today White House correspondent Richard Benedetto. All of that, worldnetdaily.com, dateline.radioamerica.org. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.